Flo here with a word that's just weird. Terry cloth. Who exactly is Terry? And why does he get his own fabric? Did he journey below SPF 50? Fight off some weeds and his daffodils? How about a word for everyone? Flotection. Yeah, I just made it up. But I'm not making up how great it feels when me and Progressive protect your new home. Ever think of that, Terry? No, Terry only thinks of himself.
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Welcome back to the Off Top Podcast. We've been like 6 days since our last podcast. It's my fault. I've been all over the place. Went to New York and back. And my schedule was crazy. Otherwise known as the Ninth Seed Podcast. I'm here with my guy, Legend of Winning. Say what's up.
Yo, what up, podcast people? It's the one and only Legend of Winning, a.k.a. Low. Shout out to Agent, because that was a pretty solid podcast name.
Yeah, it was, man. I like it. All right, so a lot has happened since the 6 days where we've last talked. It's gotten to the point where I don't even like to talk to stuff near you, Low, because I don't want to re-repeat everything on the podcast. But we just watched the Cavalier game against the 76ers. Twitter was going crazy, of course. So was Reddit. A lot of people saying that the 76ers might have a real shot, and they wouldn't be surprised if they made the finals just based on what they've seen today. Not even going to get into the free throws just yet. Yo, what do you think about you? I'm assuming you watched the whole game, yeah?
Yeah, I basically watched the whole game, yeah.
All right, I only caught like the fourth quarter and a bit of the third. So, what did the 76ers do right? Because they got off to an insane lead.
What they did right was control the pace. They're one of the fastest teams in the NBA, and their ability to sustain whatever pace they want to sustain is something that I think a lot of people overlook when it comes to the type of principles and qualities that certain teams have. And the Sixers are definitely a up-tempo pace team, especially with the absence of Joel Embiid. And they really spaced out the floor. I give out a lot of credit for J.J. Redick and Bellinelli. Not only were they running the floor, but they were running to their spots from behind the arc. But outside of that, I can't really speak too much else of what else they did positively. It was just that pace really threw off the Cavaliers because they're not too used to running up and down the court like that, or at least having any type of consistency running up and down the court in which they did in the first half.
Yeah, interestingly enough, this was a game Embiid wasn't even playing. And I don't know what it is. The flow of the team, just with or without Embiid, it almost feels like the situation with John Wall, where even when he's not there, just because the way that, I don't know if it's the way the team is coached, but just their offensive sets, their ball movement, they find ways to score even without that star talent there. So literally immediately after the game, Joel Embiid hopped on Twitter. He's like, trust the process. Got a whole lot of retweets and favorites. Of course, Joel Embiid is one of the biggest characters in the NBA. And the most, I'd say my favorite, just in terms of like entertainment. He's always there. But we got to talk about it, Lo. What's happening, right? The game is coming down to the wire. The Cavs are down 3. LeBron gets fouled as he's going up for a 3-point shot by, I believe, Covington. And then everyone's looking around like, Covington, what are you doing, man? You don't foul a 3-point shooter. It was a horrible percentage shot. Like, it wasn't a good shot he was taking. Give him the shot. LeBron goes to the free throw line. He has a chance to prove to himself. You know, Skip Bayless was just, he was just salivating at the thought of LeBron missing a free throw. He hits the first. He misses the second and is forced to miss the third to force, like, to get some sort of rebound. I believe it was it Larry Nance who just flew in to almost get the tip?
Yeah. It was Nance who almost tipped it in, yep.
Yo, he missed his second free throw in the clutch, a moment where he had, it's low, they're called free throws, right? I get the pressure. And, you know, the game is winding down. You're going up against the 76ers. This might be a playoff matchup. And so you want to prove it. He missed the free throw. I'm trying not to make projections based on one missed free throw, right? But I'm just saying they're free throws, low. That's LeBron James, bro.
I think you're doing, I mean, I understand it's a big deal, but I think the Cavs have bigger problems on their hand because the way that they were able to be, the way that the Sixers were able to just dictate the pace for majority of the game. And if anything, that's the problem that I have. But LeBron was able to really dictate it towards the end of the third quarter, entering the fourth, and really slow it down and bully ball inside because since the absence of Joel Embiid, they were kind of running small ball lineups with Ilyasova out there at the 4 and the 5. So I think that's the takeaway from the Cavs is that even even though they lost this game, they still have veteran players on their team that are able to dictate the pace. Because even Kevin Love got down there a few possessions as well. So I'm not too concerned about the missed free throws. I'm more so concerned of how exactly the Cavs are going to find a way to compete or eventually even beat the 76ers. And I think, like I said before, just slowing them down, it was a huge way they were able to kind of come back and dictate it. But I will say this, though. No team wants to see Philadelphia in the first, second, or even the third round if they're able to make it that far.
I mean, I don't know about the finals, but I'd like to see them in like the Eastern Conference finals. You wouldn't want to see
that. You know what's crazy? I think they can make it, too.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know about finals. To win the actually now with the Celtics dealing with all those injuries, there's a possibility.
The Celtics might not make it out the first round, but if they do, right now because the Sixers just beat the Cavs, the Sixers actually have the third seed, so they would actually face the Celtics in the second round, and I feel like they can just beat the Celtics just based off the fact that the Celtics are suffering from injuries and they just don't have the talent. And then in the conference finals, not saying that I have them going to the finals, but like I said before, they have the talent to compete with whatever team in the conference finals. I just feel like the experience that both the Cavs and the Raptors have, they should be able to overcome the young and upcoming Philadelphia 76ers. But I mean, that's a bad team right there, man. That's a really, really bad team, man. Y'all got to watch out for that team in the Eastern Conference.
You know what's interesting? Because the Cavs now dropped to fourth, the Raptors finally snagged the first seed. They locked it in with their win against the Pacers. And now the Raptors will face the Cleveland Cavaliers before the Eastern Conference Finals again. So a lot like last year where they faced them, and then Boston got a chance to move on and then face them in the Eastern Conference Finals. It seems like it's going to be ECF semi-conference final matchup, which I guess sucks for Raptor fans because the whole point of getting first seed was having to not deal with the Cavs until, like, just to be able to cruise a little bit, right? You go up against either Washington or Milwaukee, they're winning that series. And then who they go up against next is the 4-5. Yeah, the 4-5. So now it's between both Cleveland and Indiana. Indiana team who, if you allow me to segue, is, I don't want to say having some struggles, but there's definitely some inconsistencies there. That I was watching the game against the Raptors, they just, I don't know what it is, but they were locked down. They weren't getting much shots up, not good high percentage shots. And it was literally polar opposites of the Cleveland-Philly game, where it was super high scoring. Both teams had like 120, 130 points. Indiana finished the game with like 70-something, right, or 80-something. Like they weren't, and so if I'm a Raptors fan, which I am, of course I want the matchup to be against Indiana, but anyway, we'll see how it goes. It's an interesting. If somebody told you, Lo, that the Cleveland Cavaliers is gonna finish the Eastern Conference in the fourth seed, you would have thought they were crazy, man. Regardless of injuries, even if LeBron went down, I would have told you, nah, they're probably still gonna get the two seed. But
so would you say that they're underachieving this year, or they're disappointed?
Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, of course they're underachieving. It's not even a question.
Yeah,
okay. How can they not be underachieving? They're the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. They were supposed to be the team that cruises to the finals like they always do according to history. And so a lot of people just projected based on history, said Cleveland's going to make it back against Golden State. Of course, Golden State's in a different situation because they're dealing with injuries to star players. You can argue Kevin Love was the same with Cleveland, but not nearly as much as the KD or Curry going down or even Klay Thompson getting injured, right? Yeah, that's underachievement. That's the definition of underachieving is what they've been doing. You know,
the only reason why I asked because I thought and, about and it, and I was trying to figure out.
A lot of people were saying from the jump that either struggles in January and February is not competitor come playoff time. And you look at this team, you lose to the 76ers and you give them the three seed. They're going to have to win their last few games to try and fight for it back. Assuming that the 76ers, a team who's on a 13 game winning streak, will lose their next couple of games. I don't know, man. It's just not a good look. And I'm a little disappointed because I'm like, damn, we can't just wait till the Eastern Conference Finals for that matchup. God. No, but we'll see how it goes, man. I think Indiana-Cleveland is going to be a good challenge, even though a lot of people just assume playoff LeBron will come out of nowhere and sweep the Pacers or whoever they have in the second or third round. It'd be a good matchup if they play 4-5.
And the only reason why I really bring up the fact that the Cavaliers could possibly be underachieving is, like you stated before, in the beginning of the season, I just felt like there were so many people who were, and rightfully so, I mean, they added a lot of pieces to the roster. It was just so many people who were anticipating this roster to be so deep, so many veterans. LeBron, quote-unquote, had that help that he was longing for over the past few years. But, like you said, the fact that, and they're still a playoff team, and I definitely don't think anyone thought that there was any chance of them not being a playoff team. But the fact that they're the fourth seed, that's a bit of a stretch right there. And the fact that they're even struggling to be one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference is also a stretch. So, I don't know. And I'm about to make a video about it, too. So, that's the reason why.
You make a video about the people making excuses for this guy, LeBron, bro. LeBron misses the second free throw. Team loses the game because of him. And immediately, they turn around. They're like, yo, he had a 40-point triple-double. Stop complaining. It wasn't him. It was his team. And so, it's the same excuse you'll see a lot of superstars get, like Giannis, where they start to deflect responsibility on other guys. And, of course, Kevin Love, like, wildly bricked a shot late in the game. But, I mean, players like J.R. Smith stepped up and hit shots. But, that guy. And we need to make note of this because this is the first time I've ever seen him play. Calderon was out and also George Hill was out, which means the third-string point guard was playing. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why don't you just run LeBron at point guard? But that's not what they did. There's this guy called Seti Osman, if I'm not mistaken. That's his name.
Seti Osman won. Well, two, he's not a point guard, he's a forward. Three, I don't know why you don't believe that he should have been playing anyway.
Because I'm saying it's the lack of depth that gave him the minutes late in the game. But I don't know what he finished with, but I know late in the fourth quarter he was 2-for-11. And forget the stats for a second, the guy was just missing shots he should have been making. Like, and it wasn't looking pretty. And I was on a chat the whole time, and people were like, yo, this guy's wildin'. And I had to Google him, like, yo, who is this guy? And so in this certain situation, if a LeBron fan said to me, yo, this guy Seti is some garbage, then I'd have been like, yo, I'm not gonna lie to you, bro. He looked like he single-handedly is the reason why you guys didn't complete the comeback and win the game. Because LeBron did play a good game. So in this specific circumstance, I'm willing to give LeBron a break. Not just because he scored a lot of points in the triple-double, but because there was one individual teammate who almost felt like he was going out of his way to sabotage the team. This is what it felt like, Lo. He was missing everything, man.
You know who Seti Osman is? He's like the Dele for this team now. When Matthew Dellavedova was on this roster.
Can't stand that guy.
That's who he... I mean, he's not the same defender, or he's not the guy that gets underneath your skin.
He's Turkish, but bro. It's pronounced Osman. I'm telling you, bro. I'm telling you. If he's Muslim, it's pronounced Osman.
I know what I'm calling him, and I know what I've heard other people call him. But, like, the only reason why I say this is because he's like one of those fan favorite guys you just throw out there. Like, he's not really that good, but everyone gets hyped when he's on the floor.
So, like a Biyombo, basically.
No, Biyombo was better. Biyombo was
actually. No, I'm not saying in terms of skill, just in terms of, like, the main thing he provided was hype. And I'm like, I think he did the opposite of that today, but if that's what he did, then all right.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to be, like, consistently out there giving you some productive minutes, but every now and then, come out there, you know, give you some minutes here and there, play a little rough, tough, give you a little energy.
I'm not gonna lie. He was too sus. It looked like they took a guy.
Oh, yeah, he's sus. He's sus. Don't get me wrong. He's sus. But still, you know, you get out there, give you a couple of minutes, energy guy. Actually, who did they play before?
Not a couple of minutes. That guy was playing heavy minutes in the fourth quarter.
Who did they play the night before? Who did they play last time? I can't remember who they just played not too long ago.
I don't remember.
He made the game-winning steal. It was John Wall. John Wall, he was playing the Wizards, and John Wall turned the ball over, and he's the one who made the game-winning steal.
So that's why they kept him in the fourth quarter of this game.
No, I mean, because he's made multiple...
I haven't watched the guy to know, but this is
you
the first time.
You obviously don't know. Yeah, shout out to my man Seti. I'm not gonna let Agent hate on you because you don't know basketball, so you don't know who Seti is.
I'm telling you that there's this guy who single handedly shot the team out the game. And if it was Carmelo or if it was Wiggins, you would have jumped on him like, yo, this is what he did.
Seti's a rookie though.
I understand. Just like the context alone. If you're missing your shots, Like, for example, I've seen, we were just watching the Timberwolves game. Cat passes up some shots if he's not 100% confident he's going to make it. I don't know what kind of ego Young said he has, man. But there's a point where you realize, like, my name is not Kobe. I can't keep chucking up these shots and I'm not making them, right? Nah,
bro. Seti, keep taking your shots, Seti.
Nah, see, don't let this advice. Man, he's the reason they lost the game.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't watch basketball. He doesn't watch you. Let Seti eat. Hashtag let Seti eat.
So, when their depth restorers and the injuries that they've been plagued with are finally over, he's getting no minutes, right? He has a chance now to prove himself. If whatever you're saying is true, Lo, he's a rookie, Turkish guy, very high potential. Well, you didn't say that, but based on
I didn't say high potential.
Based on your enthusiasm, I'm assuming he's an energy guy.
Okay. He's an energy guy.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if he gets minutes in the playoffs when the rotation is cut short. Also, very questionable decision to keep him out there late. It's not a questionable decision. It's actually a really good decision.
Because you put yourself in a situation. You put yourself in a situation where, as the Cavs, you really don't care who you face in the first or second round. To be completely honest with you,
you don't.
You don't really care.
So who would you rather face if you're the Cavaliers? The Celtics in the second round that are injury ridden, or the Raptors? Because
the Cavs don't care because they're supposed to make the finals anyway.
Yeah, they don't get care. That. But part of that is taking the easiest possible route. And that's what LeBron's been doing.
There's no easy route. They're going to have to play the Raptors regardless. But so who cares?
I get what you're saying right now, Lo. I understand that. But you don't want to have to play a team earlier. Like, you don't play a team that's good earlier just because you're going to end up playing them regardless. You don't know what's going to happen, whether an injury is going to occur left or right. And, come on. There's no reason.
Look, I shout out to Ty Lue. I give Ty Lue props for actually going out there and putting out some other players around LeBron.
Why are you doing this right now?
Because you need to give them reps. You can't just keep running the same eight players. Now is not the
time. They'll get George Hill and Jose Calderon back.
First of all, he's not a point guard. I don't know why you think he's a point guard. Because it's the lack of depth.
Why he had to reach so deep into his rotation to play some of these guys that usually don't get minutes. The same thing
that happened to Dele. They had to reach into their bag because Kyrie got hurt.
I don't know because Dellavedova was a defensive guy. He provided some threes for you offensively, and he did his thing. He got an opponent's brain. From what I see, he was doing none of that. But
I watched five minutes of him, so chill out.
Let's switch it up. We're watching. No, you are not allowed to talk shit about Wiggins because I know it's coming. But I do want to talk about the Timberwolves.
How can I not talk about Wiggins and then talk about the Timberwolves?
We can't every week talk about how bad Wiggins is shooting. He's shooting bad. We understand. All right. So the Timberwolves were just playing the Lakers, and they ended up closing out the game. But interestingly enough, there is 1 minute left, and both Karl-Anthony Towns and Wiggins are both in the game. The lead is like about 12 or 15. So it's enough. It's to the point where like you would sub them out. And I got flashbacks, of course, of the D-Rose injury. The first injury D-Rose got, if you remember, Thibodeau was the coach for the Bulls. And he did the same thing in a game where it's already been done. Like, it's over, it's said and done. Sub out the guys that could potentially get injured or need rest. He didn't do either of those. D-Rose got his first major injury. And so that's why a lot of people and the stigma around Tom Thibodeau began that he overworked players. That, as well as the fact that Jimmy Butler was... Oh, it was Luol Deng at the time, but then Jimmy Butler afterwards, were leading the league in minutes. And it was always a Thibodeau player that was up there, right? So he did it again today, and it seemed like they were scratching and clawing with the Lakers, who almost felt like they were trying to lose, Lo. They were playing bench players.
It didn't feel like they were trying to lose. They were just trying to lose.
So the Timberwolves are... They might not make the playoffs, depending on how these next few games go. If you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, Lo, how worried should you be about this team?
You should be pretty concerned. I mean, they pulled out this win, and so that's one down, and another, I believe, three more to go. But the biggest reason why you should be concerned is because of the Nuggets game. They play the Nuggets for the season, last game in the season, and I don't necessarily know how that game is going to go, especially depending on how important that game is towards the end of the year. So that is a game where you have to be concerned, and they can't really lose another game. I mean, they can't lose, because the thing is, right now they own the season series. I think they're up 2-1 to the Nuggets. However, I don't necessarily know what happens if they tie 2-2. So since that is a possibility, you just don't need to lose any more games for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And even though I know you're saying I can't talk about them, but I mean, Wiggins and Towns both just got to step it up, because there's no rhyme or reason for them to be playing this poorly. And there's no rhyme or reason why Jimmy Butler should be rushed back out on the floor just so they can compete and beat the Lakers. That makes absolutely no sense. So
interestingly enough, Lo, a lot of people are talking about the Timberwolves sneaking into the playoffs, snagging that 8 seed. They're only half a game back from OKC, San Antonio, and New Orleans. But more than that, if you're Minnesota, you shouldn't just settle with getting an 8 seed. You're going to get obliterated by Houston. If anything, you stand your best chance, hopefully sneaking up to a 6 or a 5 seed. But if you can't, at least sneaking up to a 7 seed to face the Golden State Warriors without Stephen Curry. So it's not even that, like, whether they make the playoffs or not, because let's be honest, if they don't make the playoffs, then there's going to be serious questions about Thibodeau. There's going to be even more serious, because there's already serious questions about Wiggins. And then I think Cat will eventually get thrown into the question as well, because, I mean, Jimmy Butler makes a difference on that team for sure, but without him, you should be able to beat some of these teams that they're losing to. Half a game ahead of Denver, who's making a pretty good case on a 4-game win streak on why they deserve to be in the playoffs. It's an interesting scene. Like, for all we know, Lo, New Orleans can drop out the playoffs, Denver and Minnesota make it in. Or that goes with San Antonio, or even OKC, which I think would be hilarious. Now, I actually want to see OKC in the playoffs, but there's going to be some serious Melo and Paul George slander, even Westbrook slander, if for whatever reason they slip out. Because I know people are thinking
I'm not even entertaining that idea, because in my mind, they better not. Let's just say they better not slip out of the playoffs. Let's just keep it like that. Cause in my mind, they're a playoff team. And even though I know there's a possibility for them not to be in the playoffs, I haven't even ran that hypothetical past my mind yet. So I'm just going to act like they're a playoff team and just keep it like that.
All right. That's what here's their schedule for the rest of the season. So, oh my God. All right. So they play the Rockets. It says today, 8:30. Oh, that's what I... Okay, so because it's past midnight. So they play the Rockets tomorrow. Yeah, sorry. We record these podcasts mad late. Sometimes the days get mixed. Rockets next. Then the Heat, which I know like people are thinking, oh, they're going to beat the Heat. The Heat have been doing good recently. And then what should be like a really easy cruise win is against the Grizzlies. And so you'd expect them to at least get the Grizzlies and the Heat win, but the Rockets is a question mark. And so if OKC loses one of those three games, and for whatever reason, Denver and Minnesota win the rest of their schedule, which isn't possible because I think they're playing each other, but if one of those teams wins the rest of their schedule, Lo, I'm just saying there's a chance. Now, there's also a possibility that Houston rests their players. Did they secure the... Yeah, they secured the first seed. So they really could just pretend like somebody got injured, like other teams are doing, and then start to rest all of their players. And that's
the big reason why I've already said that they're going to make the playoffs. Because, again, there is no rhyme or reason. Because I don't think Harden is going to play, and I don't think Chris Paul is going to play either. But there is no rhyme or reason for them not to be in the playoffs. And just in case people are wondering, the Nuggets, they play the Clippers today, which, like Agent said, is going to be Saturday. Then they play the Trailblazers, and then they play the Timberwolves. So it's only three more games for the Nuggets. And I guess, technically speaking, the Clippers are still in the race. But, I mean, if they lose a game, then they'll be out. Then Portland, I don't know what Portland may be trying to do. They may be resting some players because they already have, I'm pretty sure they already got the third seed kind of snagged up.
No, I don't think they will. It makes sense for them to fight for home court. That's a good seed to be in right there.
I got to look at the standings.
If they win one game, they can rest the rest of their players as long as they are winning the tiebreaker versus Utah. So they could take two days off.
Oh, no. They're fine. Portland is fine against. Portland just has to win one more game, and I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it may come down to the last game of the season. Like I said, the Denver and Minnesota series. And, like, man, look, man, I know you don't want me to talk about him, but if he chokes, man, like, we're going to have a real conversation. We're going to have to, man.
Okay, I want to have this conversation with you because I know it's been happening for the last few years now, and he as a player has been kind of just falling off the map. We got to talk about Carmelo Anthony, man. Hey, I'm trying, bro, but I'm looking at his numbers right now, man. Last game, shot 25%. Game before that, 37%. Game before that, 42%. Like, if we just look at his efficiency on the floor, his scoring output, which, by the way, is really the only advantage he has right now. He's not a defensive player. He's a scorer. That's Carmelo Anthony. Now, whether you think he fits well with whatever style OKC is running with Westbrook at the helm is one thing. But the way he's playing right now, low, the only word I can use is embarrassing. Because he's Carmelo Anthony, right? He has that brand name. I got like two kicks. I got the M11s. And I got like two kicks. They're comfortable as fuck. So Carmelo's that guy.
Why are you wearing Carmelo Anthony's shoes?
Yeah, they're actually really good for ball, and they're mad cheap too. So it's a good.
No, they're really good for sitting on the bench where Carmelo Anthony should be.
So because remember at the start of the season he said he's not gonna come off the bench. He didn't even entertain the questions when reporters asked him.
Which is crazy, right? Like we try to like lower the bar for Carmelo, and he's still like nah, I got it. And he still can't go like that. That is amazing to me.
It would hurt his brand, I think, if he came off the bench. And he's and he was shooting bad.
You know what would help his brand? Winning. That's what would help it.
I don't think so.
What? You're crazy.
So like, because Carmelo's was that guy for a very long time. And I know ever since he went to the Knicks, everything kind of slowed down, and now with the Thunder. But just think about like the money he's making off the court. Like Manu Ginobili is not getting big brand deals, right? So I'm just saying, like, he knew for him, maybe it was an ego thing, maybe it was he's trying to secure the bag thing. I understand why he doesn't want to come off the bench. I'm just saying, if all he cared about was winning, then he would. And who knows? Honestly, we don't know, because in the playoffs, things might turn around. You know Westbrook gets super serious, and then they have the defense. I know we talked about the Cavs being a disappointment, but I think everybody expected better from OKC, especially like 20, 30 games in, they started to turn things around. And we're like, yo, this team got it, man. They're winning games against tough opponents. And then it just so happens that the season's coming to an end and they haven't figured everything out. And they're losing a lot of these games. Lost to Portland, San Antonio, Denver, beat New Orleans, and then a close loss to the Warriors. And I think a lot of it is Carmelo Anthony, man. I'd say he's – I know
I
you
was
like
about to say that too. Like, it's getting to a point now where – at first, I was like, maybe you might have to like look at Russell a little different, but like Carmelo is playing so bad in the last like, especially the last like 7 to 10 games when they really needed these wins, and I don't know like how he's I don't understand the drop off. Like I don't understand like how you go from a player who people kept saying like, oh man, you don't have to worry, man. We're not going to blame you for the Knicks losing because it's obvious the rest of the roster is really bad. Yeah. to a player to where we're like, all right, now we're going to like remove you from being the number one option to the number three option. You're not expected to play defense, pass the ball. Matter of fact, Melo, we could just say come off the bench. And then Melo's like, nah, I can start. I can start. And it's like, I don't know, Melo, can you? Because they asked him this question twice in the middle of the season, asked him it again. He's like, nah, man, we ain't got to make no lineup changes, man. Come on, man. I can start, man. Trust. And here we are at the end of the season, and Carmelo Anthony is looking like he's 39. Like he just looks old, and he looks tired. He looks washed. He looks out of shape. And I don't know how that's going to translate to the postseason, because that's going to be scary.
He was 0-9 in the game against the Warriors, right?
That game was trash.
And they lost by they lost by like 3 or 4.
It was a close game.
Yeah, all they had to do is make like a couple, Melo. Like you just had to like hit like the league average. You didn't even have to be better than league average, right? Which you'd assume Melo was. You just had to be league average, and your team would have won the game. You can get into what ifs with every game, so I won't dive deep into that. But 0 for 9 from 3 is unacceptable, especially from a guy who's a touted scorer, especially against a team like Golden State, who you know Westbrook has a beef against. You know he's passionate about beating this team. I actually watched the end of that game. That one was tough.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I want to be clear. You know, when that if the day comes, and I don't think it's going to come where they're going to be out of the playoffs, I am going to hold a lot of people to very high standards, as I think we should, and, you know, explain why I believe that team is underachieving. And they definitely are one of the biggest underachievers and one of the biggest disappointments this year, because Billy Donovan might be one of the worst coaches in he is one of the worst coaches.
I don't know about worst. Like he might be lower than average if at a 30.
Let me be clear about this. Let me be very clear. Billy Donovan is one of the worst coaches in the NBA. Let me be very, very clear about that. And so Billy Donovan I know about it, Agent. He's one of the worst coaches in the NBA.
Why?
It's poor offensive management. There's no system or scheme offensively. Everyone basically just ISOs. You just give the ball to Russ or PG or Melo, and everybody just ISOs, and everybody else just stands around and watch them ISO, and that's all they do. Defensively, for whatever reason, he still ices and blitz off of the pick and roll as if it's 2009, and then expects like Steven Adams and Melo to commit to a double team off the pick and roll, and then expects them to rush back and rotate. Like, he just dogs Roberson and PG the entire time. It's like, PG and Roberson, y'all guard the best perimeter players on the opposing team, and then when they call for a pick and roll, blitz them, and then PG and Roberson, y'all also need to rotate as well. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, they have to do all of that while Russell Westbrook is just sitting off to the side, not playing no defense at all. He has no responsibilities on the defensive end. Like, stuff like that is just like, I don't get that. And it's very, very obvious, and I don't care what anyone is trying to tell me. It's very obvious that they still are structuring that offense just so, but they're structuring that offense and it allows Russell Westbrook to get those triple doubles. And if we're at a point where Russell Westbrook cannot function any other way outside of him dominating the ball almost every other possession, that is a problem, not only with Russell Westbrook, but the coaching staff, the fact that they don't even expect him to do anything else without the ball in his hand. Because when he doesn't have the ball in his hand, he is sitting off to the side and just like looking at everybody else, just ISO. That's a coaching problem. So yes, Billy Donovan, with that much talent, he is one of the worst coaches in the NBA. But PG, up and down offensively, Russell Westbrook still inefficient to majority elite level point guards, turns the ball over at a ridiculous rate. But again, Carmelo Anthony, man, the only thing that he is expected to do is score, and he's not even doing that at this point. And that is suspect right there, man.
No, I have an interesting question for you. If I'm not mistaken, LeBron had 8 turnovers in the last game. I could be wrong. That's what the commentator said. If somebody gets 10 turnovers with their triple-double, just technically speaking, is that a quadruple-double?
I guess technically it is, but no one doesn't call it a quadruple-double.
But like, if you had to write down LeBron had this much quadruple-doubles in his career, would...
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't count that as a quadruple-double in that sense, no.
So, Lo, I want to play a game with you, man. This is going to be an interesting game. I'm going to say the real names of NBA players, and you have to guess which NBA player it is. Do you want to do this?
I guess. I mean, I don't... I'm trying to figure out where this came from.
I was scrolling through the internet, and I found someone's name. I'm like, that is not anything like what he calls himself in the NBA. So, I'll start off with some potentially easy ones, man. We'll do like 4 or 5. If you guys are listening, play along, although you'll probably only get like a couple of these. So first player is Alphonso Clark Burke III.
What?
His name is Alphonso Clark Burke III.
Look, man, I heard you the first time. I don't know. I don't know who that is.
Just try. Just take. You have 3 guesses. Alphonso Clark Burke III.
I'm assuming Trey Burke because you said Burke.
Okay. All right, Lo. Okay. Here's an easy one. I'll only do his first name because it's so easy. Wardell.
Oh, that's Curry. Yeah, I know that's Curry. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Lo, I see you. I'm going to get a little bit harder with these, okay?
Pause.
That's not a pause. Until you said pause, it wasn't a pause, man.
It's a pause, bro. That's a pause.
I, I'm only going to say this guy's first name, and I'm going to try my hardest to pronounce it. Chukwuemeka Nubuisi.
What?
Chukwuemeka Nubuisi.
That's not Nene's name, is it?
No, but you're actually, like, you're on a ballpark. I'll name you two teams he played for. Charlotte and New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Okay, I got super hard. Well, I need to stop using the word hard. That was Emeka Okafor himself. Emeka Okafor.
What a face ass. Oh, my God. What a face.
Okay. Okay, that's actually his real name. I'm trying to think of a player, though.
I know Ray Allen's real name isn't Ray. It's something else.
Yeah, it actually, you're right about that. I remember seeing it like a couple years ago. It's Walter. Yeah, his Walter. First name is Walter. Yeah, so Walter. If you're in the NBA, do you just like show up and you're like, all right, this is my new name? How does this work? Or does he decide that at college? Because like, I can't imagine they called him Walter in college and then switch to Ray, right?
I don't know, but what is what's J.R. Smith's real name? I can't remember
what it was.
That's
a really solid question, actually. Let me find out.
Once you say it, I'll know what it is because
Earl Smith.
Yeah, Earl. Because I remember T-Mac was teasing him about it.
Tracy McGrady. His name is Tracy Lamar McGrady Jr. I just find it interesting because until like 3 years ago, I didn't know that NBA players just made up names that they wanted to be called and then just kind of rolled with that for their brand. I didn't know people did that. I believe Nene's name is like Nene Hilario, if I'm not mistaken.
And yeah, like, that is right. Yeah, Nene is actually his first name. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and there was a point where he literally decided like, nah, I don't want y'all to ever call me Hilario. And like, so like, if you didn't know Nene like 5 years ago, you just know he has no last name. His name is just Nene.
Like, what a face. Hey, you know what's so crazy? In the games, though, it looks like his name is nothing but Nene.
It does, yo. He looks like a Nene kind of person, too.
That'd be crazy if you only had one name. Like, if you didn't even have, like, a last name, it was just one name.
I mean, I'm sure some people have one name.
Do they? Now I'm thinking about this, like you said, are NBA players like just at some point of their career just like, you know what, I'm not going to be called my first name? Like, is that like a thing? Like, you just like have a moment in your life where you're like, they're not going to be calling me Walter Allen coming down the court. Like, they're not going to do that. So I'm just going to change it to Ray. Like, that's what they're going to call me.
I guess so, man. I mean, I guess some people like Luke Richard and Mbah Mute, they just commit. Like, they're like, you're going to call me Luke Richard and Mbah Mute. I don't care how many syllables my name is. You know, it's a handful for any commentator.
Luke Richard and Mbah Mute. He doesn't even shorten it, though. Like, he's just like, yeah, just call me that. But
all these syllables. Walter,
Walter here, he can't be called Walter. He's like, yo, you calling me Ray.
Is LeBron's real name LeBron?
Yes, LeBron, bro.
Okay.
I can't think of no one else.
His middle name is Raymond. This is some interesting facts nobody knew about, guys.
No, I knew that already.
Come on, you didn't know his middle name was Raymond. You just lying.
I did, actually.
You didn't know that, though. But all right.
I don't think it's pronounced Raymond. I don't know why you're pronouncing it like you're a 90s wrestler or something like that.
I'm just saying it how it's pronounced, man. It's Raymond.
I think it's Raymond. I just think it's LeBron Raymond James.
I guess that makes sense.
Why are you pronouncing?
All right, we'll move on.
He's like Razor Ramon. Like, what are you doing right now?
I saw Steph Curry's name, Wardell. It's actually a song somebody made about that. I forgot his name, Rex Life Raj or something like that. He made a song called Young Wardell. You want me to sing it to you?
Yeah, you definitely need to stop going through the bad parts of YouTube. Cause you're bugging
he's
right
actually
now.
He's a decent rapper.
A decent rapper. Cut it out, agent.
No, like he's actually not. He's like mildly popular too. It's not even like he's unknown.
He's mildly.
Because he's not really. I'll tell you his Spotify views. I'll boot it up right now.
Look, man, I'm not here trying to talk about that, yo. Look, bro. I'm trying to figure what else are we supposed to talk about? I mean,
you don't have to talk about nothing, bro. What's on your mind, though?
Low key, I already got done shitting on
OKC. Wiggins, you've done that, so that's good and for the Wiggins, podcast.
So that's right? check, right?
Check, okay. Check.
Trying to figure out who else. Shout out to the Jazz. The fact that they're the fourth seed in the West. That's pretty impressive. I'm not even gonna lie.
That's a come up. That team, no jokes. 57 win team if they had Gobert from the start.
You know, Scott, I would actually agree with you. Yeah. I think Gobert would have propelled him another 8 to 10 games. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. It was literally like a switch when he came back. The team just went on a rampage.
And they're historically like one of the best defensive teams in the last 15 to 20 years. Like, I don't know how they're able to just do what they do.
It's especially crazy. After losing a scorer in Gordon Hayward. I don't know. It's cool to see that team come together like that, man. You know, I want to talk to you about, we mentioned him a couple podcasts ago, Trey Burke himself, Mr. Allen Iverson, Mr. The Solution. He's back, back at it again on the Ninth Seed podcast. Yo, he's not only been playing well now for like a couple weeks, like he's consistently playing well. Lo, I'm about to, I got to watch a couple more Knicks games because trust me, it's very hard to convince yourself that watching Knicks games is a good use of your time, right? Like, you could be watching any other game going on, but you decided to watch the team that never has a chance, ever, with horrible ownership and just as poor management. But they might have stumbled across a gem, Lo. I'm willing to bet you, Lo, that this guy, Trey Burke, is going to be an 86th overall in a couple years.
The only reason why I disagree is because they have Tim Hardaway there. And not to say that, like, Tim Hardaway is, like, this
But they've great... had him before, and they gave him away.
They had him before. They had him before he was developed, and they didn't know what they were doing with him. But I feel like they kind of both, Tim and Trey Burke, kind of fulfill the same role, like an undersized scoring two guard.
And one is way more expensive than the other, which I guess makes you question why they even wanted him back to begin with.
I'm about to say, that. I mean, it kind of proves... Why I don't think that I don't think Trey Burke may not even get the same responsibilities or opportunities next year because they're spending just so much money on Tim Hardaway.
Yeah,
so I disagree. I don't think they're going to which. I don't think they're going to which color. I don't think they're
going
to.
He's going at least 86 overall though.
No, that's too high. He just had a few good games and that's it.
Come on, you're underselling him here.
Oh, you know what we do have to talk about real quick. It's a low key celebration. Shout out to the Detroit Pistons for missing the playoffs because they have officially
I knew you could bring that up, man.
They have officially been eliminated from the playoffs. I don't know why you all thought in the beginning of the season that they were going to make the playoffs.
Who, me?
No, I'm just saying, like, certain people, especially in my comment section, who kept telling me, Lo, they're going to make the playoffs. No, they're not.
You know what's funny? Like, they got Blake Griffin and they immediately started to lose games. And it was only until, like, their playoff chances were almost out of reach. They were like, yo, let's do it, fellas. Like, I don't know what got into Stan Van Gundy. Must have ripped someone's head off, right? Because the last 10 games, they're 8-2. And Washington has lost their last 4. So all we needed was this earlier. And I get that you made a trade for... I'm gonna tread carefully and say star player for Blake Griffin.
Please tread very, very carefully. And also, speaking of this star player, you know he's hurt, right?
Blake Griffin's hurt right now? He was hurt last time.
He's hurt right now.
Last time we talked about him on the podcast, he was also injured.
So that was part of the bundle. You know what I'm saying? That's part of the whole deal of getting Blake Griffin. The bundle deal was power forward, solid passer for his position, can't space the floor, high contract, and injury prone. Like, that was part of the bundle deal that you got for Blake Griffin.
And I think everybody agreed when it happened that it wasn't going to be worth it. Yo, Lo, interestingly enough, Tobias Harris is almost, they're literally about the same points per game since the trade. So you get a player like Blake Griffin, not because he's a defensive guy, but because offensively, he's, I don't want to use the word versatile, but he finds ways to score. He's a scorer. And so you trade away Tobias, and you find out Tobias has the same scoring output that Blake has on the other team now, except, Lo, he does it a lot more efficiently. While Blake shoots 43%, Tobias is shooting 48%. And so, hilariously enough, if we just look at those two players, even though there was others involved in the deal, like Avery Bradley, and the picks involved, the Pistons lost. So, I mean, I know when the trade originally happened, we were both skeptical that it would even make the team better. But I remember saying, like, that not only was this could have been, like, a potential mistake, but I think the focus of this wasn't winning games. It was more to make sales. And I think Blake Griffin's an exciting player to watch. And that might have just been their focus.
But they're still not selling anything out, though. They're still not, like, selling out arenas.
I mean, I'd have to check their attendance before and after. But
Them games I watch, ain't too many people in them seats.
Yo, Detroit's a weird... Last time I was in Detroit, right, Lo? Like a month ago? The whole place is like downtown. I'm not talking about like in a suburb. Downtown is straight up abandoned buildings. And like it's a real, like, you know you're in Detroit when you get to Detroit. And then in the middle of all of that is Little Caesars Arena just shining with a bright white light. It doesn't even feel like it belongs in the neighborhood because it's like it's so left field. It's hilarious.
Let me be honest with you. That's how the Falcon Stadium is, or even the new one, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. That's exactly how it is.
Is it downtown, like the stadium?
It's downtown, and like it's literally just in the hood, in the ghetto. And they started to tear down some of the apartments that were literally across the street. When I say across the street, I literally mean across the street. Like it's just abandoned apartment buildings. They finally start tearing them down, but like. For real, they built that in front of just abandoned apartment buildings and some gas stations, like a whole bunch of miscellaneous things, bro.
That's hilarious, man. I guess like maybe the land was cheaper in that area, but I just found it hilarious. I also feel like maybe part of me is just selfish, and I talked about this before. Blake Griffin, I don't know if he writes his own material, but he delivers it pretty well. He's a pretty good stand-up comic. I don't know if you've seen him. He uploaded
He is a good stand-up comic because so far his career has been a joke. So, you're right.
Come on, man. Let me chill. Let me chill.
That was over. That was way too much. That was too much.
When he does retire, whenever that is, I really want to see him like go all in on stand-up comedy. And I know Shaq dives into stand-up comedy. He does his own. He hosts his own events, which is dope, and he helps put some people on. It'd be cool to see Blake Griffin as one of those guys. Whenever. It could be in like 10 years. It could be in like 5 years. It depends. I don't know how things are going to go.
But. You know what I hope he just dives into? Becoming a better basketball player. I hope he does, yo.
Lo, you a troll, bro.
You know what I'm just saying? I hope he delves into really becoming a better basketball player because as talented as he is, I don't know why we have to sit here and just look at him underachieve. I don't get that part.
What's up? It's Justin from the Driving Dish NBA podcast. When I was in eighth grade, I switched from wearing glasses to contacts because I liked playing the game of basketball. And ever since then, I've had to deal with getting contacts, which takes way too long. You have to sit in the waiting room for a really long time. It always kind of smells weird in there. That all changed when I found simplecontacts.com. You show them a picture of your prescription. You pick the brand of contacts that you use. You put in your address and they're on their way. And so much cheaper than going to a doctor every single time you need contacts. Took me about 15 minutes right before I left for work, and we're going to save you $30 off your first order with them at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or use the enter code almighty at checkout. That's $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or enter the code almighty at checkout. Just remember, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. They only do a test that makes sure your contacts are going to give you 20/20 vision. They don't write completely new RXs or examine eye health.
Alright, anyway. Lo, some interesting stuff happened. It's always players that bet on themselves, whether it pans out or whether they made a catastrophic mistake that cost them tens of millions.
Are you talking about Nerlens Noel?
No, I'm not. I was talking to talk about Ennis Cancer, but what did Noel do?
Oh, people starting to go back and figure out how much money Nerlens Noel is probably going to lose. Because, you know, he better
for not
taking
that deal. Yeah. How much would that be? Because I don't think he was going to get a max offer with the 76ers, which is why he wanted out. But I think he was like, I have to go back and check the reports.
He got a contract from Dallas, but he felt like it wasn't enough, and he thought that he'd be better suited if he just tried another full season with Dallas and just got.
So what did he do? Did he just take a qualifying offer?
Yeah, he took a qualifying offer. Yep.
Wow. And I think they quickly realized they dodged a bullet.
Exactly. I think he left like $80 to $90 million on the table.
Imagine living with that, Lo. Imagine making a decision and then like you cost yourself that much money. Insane.
Hey man, shout out to Nerlens Noel.
I guess you could, if you really believe in yourself, Lo. I'm gonna be serious. If you really believe in yourself and you also want to be secure, you'll do what Stephen Curry did. Stephen Curry. I'm sure he believed he had really high upside, but he signed a deal for like $7-8 million a year, and so he's getting that bag in case something happens. Because remember, at the time he was very injury prone, and so the fact that he even got that deal, a lot of people were like, "Yo, I don't know if it's gonna work out. I don't know if it's gonna hurt the cap." Whatever the case is, and then he proved himself actually the best shooter of all time, and I don't know, it just paid off. So anyway, Enes Kanter said he's switching his agent. And he's considering, Lowe, this can sound crazy, I know, but he said this. He's considering declining an $18.6 million option with the Knicks. Who is giving him more than that?
How long is the deal? Is it like 1 or 2 years, or what? How long is this deal?
I'm assuming the option
you might decline it just because of the lack of financial security over like an extended period of time. Like even though it may be $18 million in 2 years... I would much rather take like a $22 million contract in 3 years.
Because, Lo, if you're declining, you're assuming that next year you potentially might get injured or you might play horribly and no one's going to want to sign you. $18.6 million? How much would you pay for Enes Kanter? Like, I might pay like $10, $11 million, right?
Yeah, I would. But like I say, is it 18? It's not $18.6 million each year, is it? Or is it 18?
No, it's just an option, so it's just 1 year.
Oh, he's going to decline his last year in his option.
Yes.
But why would you still do that as well? Because you'd be much better off trying to get a contract now than going another season where you're buried under the bench and your value may not be the same as it is right now. Because I feel like right now, the only higher his value has been was probably last year, the year before that in OKC, where he was really contending for sixth man of the year. So right now, he might feel like this is probably the highest my value is going to be after a year with the Knicks. And if I spend another year with the Knicks, there's a possibility that it could be even worse. So, I mean, I don't know. I understand why he's doing it, though.
So here's what he said, in quotes. He said, "You're always thinking about the business part, but for me, basketball comes first. We've got 4 games left and the Knicks are still paying me. The Knicks are paying for me to go out there and, if I'm healthy, to go out there and play. So if I feel really good, I'll go out there and play." So he's almost trying to be selfless. And honestly, I don't think he's actually considering it. To me, it just kind of seems like a ploy to get the fans behind you. Like, you really think about, I'm basketball first. Like, I'll get the bag afterwards. But this is my life. This is what I do. This is my passion. He followed up saying, "It'd be really selfish to think about opting in or opting out or thinking about my contract and not playing, giving up on my teammates and my team. It'd be really selfish. For me, the Knicks are still paying me. I'm still part of this team. If I'm healthy, I'm just going to go out there and fight." So he's almost saying like, yo, I don't really... Basically what Steve Nash did, like he's not comfortable getting paid even though he's not playing because he feels like he's taking away from the team.
Speaking of Steve Nash...
Come on, actually, right now, Lo?
I actually have 2 questions for you. One, because I don't give a fuck about no Enes Kanter.
It's not remotely... He's thinking about kicking his agent out because his agent's telling him, secure the bag. So his agent gets paid and he gets paid and he's saying, nah, basketball comes first. I mean, I appreciate the passion, but come on, man.
I understand where he's coming from, though. I understand the move he's making. The only problem that he has is that it may not work out for him because if he denies the qualifying offer and then tries to test his luck in free agency, it may not be that many people who even are willing to pay him any significant amount of money, let alone secure him with a 3 or 4 year deal. Like that is really the bigger problem. And I feel like that's what he's trying to go after. But
yeah, potentially.
I don't really care about Enes Kanter. He's a trash player. He's not trash, but he's a bench player. I don't really care.
I think he's a starter, but all right, go ahead.
He's not a starter. Not in today's NBA. No, no, not.
I think he's an 80 overall, maybe a 79.
That's a stretch. That's a stretch. All right,
go ahead. What do you want to say about Steve Nash?
What I was going to ask you is, because apparently you're supposed to be doing your homework, so what I forgot you were watching some documentaries. Okay,
are you going
to
quiz me on the podcast?
No, I'm just asking you, what documentaries have you been watching?
So first I figured, like, because, yeah, podcast people, listen, bro, I have no interest in NBA history. It happened, and we've moved on. The only thing I really care about is what's happened since 96, Kobe and Iverson's draft. Before that, like, my interest fades dramatically. But y'all put me on the spot. Y'all saying, agent, you need to come up with your top 10 of all time list. I can't come up with a top 10 of all time list if I don't understand all time as I understand.
People pressuring you now, right?
I mean, you are on the podcast.
Oh, no. Are people pressuring you to make a top 10 all time list, agent?
Yeah, there's a couple guys that hit me up on Twitter.
Exactly. They pressuring you, bro. They putting that pressure on you. Yo, okay, all my podcast people keep pressuring them. Put that pressure on them.
So the first thing I decided to do was, like, let's freshen up on MJ. I watched an MJ documentary.
Freshen up on MJ. Oh, my God.
Because, like, I have an idea of how MJ's career went, but I wanted some details. I didn't know, like, they were talking a lot about, like, players believed that MJ was taking away from their game. And, like, there was times, a lot like what Kobe did, where MJ would, like, curse out a player, and then, like, the guy wanted to get the fuck off the team. He said, I'm tired of playing with this guy. And so it was just interesting to get, like, the background about, like, what MJ as a personality was like.
The fact that this is, like, news to you is amazing.
It's not like that really comes up in debates when you're talking about, like, yo, who's the GOAT? You're not like, but MJ made his players. But when he came back to the Wizards, I didn't know he owned a part of the Wizards and then sold it to come back and play. Like,
so I was learning. Oh, my God. Like, the fact that this is news to you?
Okay, Lo, stop being condescending. So,
This is the problem with, like, having a basketball channel. Because a lot of things to me that aren't news, or a lot of things to me that's not interesting because I've known them for so long, to a lot of people, it is news. Like, to a lot of people, they're just like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Like, someone was telling me, like, do a video about, the reason why I did that Sean Marion video is because it was a handful of people who just didn't know how good Sean Marion was. But in my mind, I'm like, it's kind of obvious who Sean Marion was throughout his career. But, like, people just didn't know who he was. And it's
some,
like,
people only caught, like, the tail. Like, if they're younger fans, like, they didn't catch. They might have caught, like, the tail end of him in Phoenix. But really, they only saw, like, his stint with the Raptors and everything. Like he was the Cavs for a bit, too. Like, it was pretty bad past that. I think we could agree. Anyway, people told me to. I wanted to watch one on Karl Malone, but I paused on that because people told me to watch the one on Shaq and Penny, which I'm going to do tonight. So it should be interesting. I want to get the 90s down first, then I'm going to go back into the 80s. And Lo, I don't know, man. You're pushing it if you expect me to learn 70s and 60s.
That's fine. It's not too many people who know that much about the 70s and 60s.
Yeah. I might like watch a couple about like the biggest superstar in that era, but past that, like, there's just no point. But yeah, I put out a tweet and like I was like, yo, what's some good documentaries? A lot of the people like named the documentaries I already watched. Like, I watched one on Dirk already. Of course, the Iverson one that's on Netflix.
Some of those documentaries, you gotta be careful though, because some of them, they just kind of like low key hyping up some of these players.
They do. They did that one with the Dirk one for sure. I remember.
They did, but they also did it with the Iverson one, and I'm like, man, all right.
So what part was hyped up about that? I felt like that was
I don't know which one you watched. I don't know which one you watched.
The one on Netflix that talked about how like his life was almost ruined because he was at this bowling alley when the incident went down. And then like he kind of documented his career from high school, that incident, and then moving on to... He was in Georgetown, right? They gave him a chance in Georgetown before...
Was that one where they kept... Like, it's one of them where they just keep interviewing like a handful of people, and almost every single last one of them swears up and down... They knew that Iverson was going to be this great player. And I'm like, okay, calm down. Like, he was playing football and everything in high school. So it was like, no one didn't necessarily. And he was like 5'9", 5'10", right?
Yeah.
So how could you know he was going to be a great basketball player while he was playing football at a significantly shorter height than everyone else playing basketball? Like, how could you just know that?
I feel like it's like, you know, like when a lot of people are like, yo, I knew him when he was this. So I was like, yo, I knew Iverson, and you can't go back and prove what they're saying is wrong, so they could just pretend, sit there and make up facts if they wanted to. But besides the point, it was like, that was probably the most emotional one, but I already watched that one. That wasn't one I watched recently. I don't remember though, like a lot of the interviews. But yeah, I want to go like deep into, especially 90s, not as much 80s. I guess I'm really interested in 90s because that's the time Magic was on fire, Jordan was on fire.
You said a lot of Magic guys was on fire during the 90s, Agent?
Yeah, early 90s. But I think that was around the time
he played like 2 years during the 90s.
I think that was around the time where there was so much competition that a lot of guys that I feel like otherwise would have had rings didn't have rings. And you know what? We'll see. We'll see how it goes, Lo.
I don't know. Many people make arguments that it wasn't that competitive during the 90s.
I mean, I can't jump into all that, but that's, I mean, what are you comparing that to? What we have now?
Oh, yeah. I think this year there's way more just talented players than there might have ever been in NBA history. But
I might agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, because it's pretty ridiculous. Yeah. But they'll say like in the 90s, because Michael didn't really face any super teams and how there was expansion teams. There was like five or six expansion teams during the 90s. So that they watered down the NBA and how Michael didn't really face any competent two-way shooting guards, shooting guards who were playing elite at the offensive and defensive end. So people make those arguments.
Mm-hmm. And that's always going to be the case with expansion teams until like they get a chance to bootstrap and pick themselves up from the dirt, because that's really what they're in when they initially get there. Although some teams like get really lucky. I think the Raptors had a lot of luck when they first were introduced, I think, in the 95 season.
No, they didn't have any luck until what? 2000, 2001?
But think about this, Lo. Like, when you have an expansion team, you're basically just hoping and begging that your scouting pays off. And I believe they signed Antoine Jameson. He was a sign-and-trade, if I'm not mistaken, at they sent him to Golden State. I could be wrong. This is all, like,
no, they drafted him the same draft class with Vince Carter, and he was a selection before VC was, and they just trade him at the draft day.
Yeah. So I feel like some moves like that would, I don't even know if they knew what they were doing. And keep in mind, like around that time, MLSC was really just focused on making profits. That's why they got in, right? And so it wasn't until like 2007, 2008, where Bargnani was like, everyone's like, yo, he's really ass, is when they started to really change their tone. 2012, I feel like they finally converted. There's some teams like that where like, you get lucky with a couple moves and you get a star player who can just like propel your team upwards.
Bro, it took y'all like nearly 15 years to be a competent team.
But I don't think that's fair though, because I think we were a competent team when we had Vince Carter and T-Mac. We just weren't a championship team. So I mean, it depends what your definition.
Only made the playoffs twice.
Yeah, I know. And then Vince Carter left. Then we restarted with Bosch. Then Bosch left. It's the
whole
process.
And then y'all made the playoffs twice with Bosch, and that's it. Like throughout the entire like 90s. That's just me spitting facts again. That's too. There may be too many facts for you. You know what I'm saying?
This guy, bro.
It might be too many facts.
I'm assuming there's a Jerry West. I definitely want to watch Jerry because that guy lost too many championships for me not to watch like a documentary on him. Like I'm so curious how somebody handles losing that many times. Or I'm assuming what the... Like, there must have been a response. I don't know if it was as big as, like, the type that LeBron has to deal with, right? Where he loses in the finals and they're like, 2-6 or whatever, right? I don't know.
I think it was much more understandable back then, if I'm not mistaken, because it's not like Jerry West never had a finals where he just didn't show up. Because he was playing so great that he was the one player that received finals MVP while even being on a losing team. So yeah, if I'm not mistaken, from what I understand, he always showed up. Like there was never really a moment where he underperformed and he was the biggest reason why they lost. It was just that when you're matching up with the Boston Celtics, who had all of those great players and a great system and a great coach and then Bill Russell anchoring the defense, it just made it that much more difficult for them to have any type of success. So I think For him, it's a lot more reasonable. But for LeBron, not so much, no.
So, Lo, I want to get your opinion on something. Because I went back and I was watching some ABA, or I think it was ABA at the time, in the 50s and 60s. low.
It probably wasn't ABA, but you got it. Okay.
Whatever it is, it was basketball. These players were ass low. These were professional players, and they were ass. Like, when I think about players like George Mikan, who everybody hypes up, who was he, the first guy to dunk or something like that? Like,
was he oh my God, cut it out, AJ.
Okay, whatever, because I haven't went back. If you get a chance, people listening, YouTube, like 1950s, 1960s basketball. And then if you compare that to today.
Anyone is going to do that.
No, they will, because now they're going to be curious. Like, yo, I wonder what they're playing like. And when I tell you, like, I wouldn't be surprised if a bench player, like, if Marcus Teague was saucing back then. Like, Marcus Teague can go back then, and he could destroy everybody. Like, that's how I feel. But I don't know, because I haven't dived in deep to research the context. I'm low. Were they just, like, explain to me. What happened in the 50s and 60s, man? Was it just the players now are evolved and better with new scientific technology to improve and develop training? Or like, is there something I'm missing, man? Because they looked horrible out there.
No, I mean, they were just trash. I mean, there's no way to put it. They were trash.
Like, because there was no three-point line, it was almost like it felt like if you just went to the Y, you can go to the Y and find, like, you know, like they have the old man leagues, like, in the old heads of hoop. It felt like they were doing that. And I don't know, man. It's just like, because when a lot of people talk about NBA history, they talk about, like, yo, everyone was so fantastic. See, now everybody just sucks. So it was just neat to go back there. And
but that's a part of the NBA community, especially older fans who tend to embellish what was happening past, like, the 80s. Because past the 80s is very suspect. But I'll say this about, to defend players in the 50s, 60s, and even part of them in the 70s. A great example of this is, remember your first time, like, playing NBA Live or 2K, right? And
yeah.
Even though you thought you might have been killing it, you were trash. You just trash. But, like, who you were playing, like, your siblings or your cousins, since all of you all were around the same age, and your concept of how basketball was played and your understanding of just video games in general was so little that you were trash. But as time continued to progress, you start to gradually understand basketball. You start to gradually understand the mechanics of the game, to where you're at a point now where you're just great at playing 2K, right? Now, you can put yourself now back in, you know, the early 2000s and try to play NBA Live or 2K or whatever, and you would be much better now. But the only reason why you're much better now isn't necessarily because how different the game is, but simply because your understanding of how to play the video game has changed over time. And I think that's the part that I think many people fail to realize about players in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, is that even though, yes, they were trash, they're bad because they don't necessarily understand the functions and the mechanics of how to play basketball. And so the argument that many people try to make is that if you put a player like DeAndre Jordan in the 50s or 60s, he'll just be Bill Russell. And I understand that argument, but I disagree with that, because DeAndre Jordan isn't creative enough to build a platform and to have building blocks and build the blueprint of how to be a dominant center. Because in today's NBA, he hasn't evolved at all. And he's given all the opportunity, the techniques, and he's been given all the videotape to understand how to post up and shoot threes and become a better free throw shooter. And he still hasn't been able to evolve outside of the
limiter. So you don't think it's the case of, like, players of this era work harder? You think it's more just generational advantages that, like, we have now?
Yeah, it's just generational advantage. It's just understanding of how basketball functions. That's all it is.
I don't know.
Because basketball was like a brand new sport to them. So how would they know how to play at the same level that we're playing at now if they didn't thoroughly understand it? Here's a better example, right? The three-point line was introduced into the NBA, I believe, in 1978, right? It took us until really like 2016 to thoroughly understand how to use the three-point line to our advantage. That's how long it took us.
Maybe like 2014, but all right.
Okay, you get what I'm saying. It took a very long time for people to understand how to utilize a 3-point line the way we're utilizing it over the last 4 to 6 years. But it took us a very long time to get to this point. And so
I think the first example might have been like around 2006 when the Magic were playing with Dwight Howard. And
that's 2008.
All right, whatever.
And exactly, basically they were just, that's exactly, that's how I felt, exactly.
There was, but the 2 to 4 year difference is a little different. Basically, I'm trying to say, like, they had Dwight Howard in the low post, and they were using shooters like Redick to just stretch the floor and give him space. And then,
but you can make an argument that the 2005 Suns were like that.
Nah, because they didn't have the same shooting ability. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Hedo Turkoglu on the Magic at the time?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So, like, they had, like, at the time, J.J. Redick and Hedo Turkoglu were, like, top tier, like, those just shooters. And they're both on one team with a big man. And I think, was Jameer Nelson there? Like, whoever was there, like, they were laced with shooters. I think more so than the Suns. I think Joe Johnson was a good shooter. Rajah Bell off the bench was a good shooter. Sean Marion wasn't, like, a great three-point shooter. He was average
at best. But Steve Nash was a phenomenal three-point shooter.
Steve Nash as well. Anyway, I just think, yeah, you're right. If you want to date back further, I just think the Magic were a better three-point shooting threat as a team. But, yeah, I guess.
But even like D'Antoni said, like, D'Antoni functioned in an offense and failed and, like, kind of tried to almost talk himself out of the idea that that style of basketball actually worked. And it took him, I mean, we're in 2018 now. It took him nearly a decade to get back to where he's at right now, to where he's kind of like, no, I was right. Like, I was right about how basketball is going to be played and how it should be played. And but so that type of process is,
I don't think it was a philosophical change that, like, it was, he really just switched to, like, he only now cares about analytics. He's an analytic coach. And that's different than, I think, what he was doing with the Suns, is he was just trying something. He didn't have any proof it was going to work. He just thought about it. He probably wrote down some plays and tried out some sets with his team and thought, like, this could possibly work. And so he had the athletes and the speed and the young guys at the time.
But analytics exists back then. If I'm not mistaken, he was part of the analytic department.
No. Because it wasn't even remotely closed. Now they have firms, literally entire firms that just calculate and aggregate data using algorithms to help project whether this player in the draft is going to be this.
It's advanced, but no, analytics was existing back then. Because, like, the whole PER movement originated in, like, in the late 90s.
But that's just once. I think that's maybe, like, the first step people took to, like, advance stats, right? And I think, I remember at the time, a lot of people were like, man, fuck the PER. We don't care about that stat. It doesn't mean anything. But
I know, but like, what I'm saying is there were a group of people who were, like, really behind analytics. Yeah. But they just didn't have the same. They didn't have a.
But that wasn't D'Antoni, is what I'm saying. Like he even like dated back.
I
don't know.
I feel like it was though, because D'Antoni and I even give credit to Danny Ainge and Steve Kerr, because Steve Kerr was actually the GM for the Suns at that time, and they were all part of that. And Steve Nash. I mean, not Steve Nash. Steve Kerr. Excuse me. I don't know.
Was if
I
said the GM that of this? Nah, it was Brian Colangelo. And that
after Colangelo left, Steve Kerr picked up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Steve Kerr picked up.
They were.
And Steve Kerr was always huge on analytics. And Larry Bird and Kevin McHale recently had their like a almost like a back and forth for an interview, if you will.
But I'm just telling you what D'Antoni said in an interview. He just said he was stupid in the past. For maybe he doubled down or tripled down on his belief, but he just said in the past he did, like, if he just knew what he knew now. He could have. I'm sure he could have thought he could have coached that team to a championship.
But real quick, what I was going to say was that Kevin McHale, because I thought it was very interesting. Kevin McHale and I just drew a blank. Larry Bird was having an interview, and they were talking about, you know, how the NBA has changed. And Kevin McHale and Larry Bird was like, yeah, like back in the day, like Danny Ainge knew like this was going to happen. Like he would go on and on about how shooting threes is what was going to take over, and how if you shot threes, you'll be better off shooting more threes and posting up, and how players who just shoot threes will eventually be more valuable because it's just a more valuable shot. And like he was like, they were going on and on about how he was explaining to them how he was valuable to that team, even though he just shot threes. And then like, they were all like, oh, okay, all right, Danny, all right, just go over there, spot up real quick. But like now, like here we are several years later, he's one of the better decision makers in all of NBA right now, and he was someone who was able to look forward in the NBA with the way that the trajectory was heading into, especially with the spacing and the importance of the three ball. So And again, that was him just with an idea that has manifested itself to where the league has been headed into for the last 3 to 4 years now. But what I'm saying, I'm saying all that to say that it's been an underlining theme in the NBA for quite a while now. It just has really picked up over the last 5 years.
I think if you're a coach, you almost need to have like the ability to project what's next. Because by the time Golden State Warriors proved to everybody that you don't live and die by the three, that you can use the three ball, be efficient with it, develop shooters around you, and then win championships, that everybody else is too late to the party, right? So by the time they build something like that, the next Mike D'Antoni's or Steve Kerr's are going to figure out what the next thing is, and they're going to use that to help win. And so, whatever the case is, I don't know how we got to this debate.
I'll wrap it up. I'll wrap it up like this. This is how we got here. So I say all of this to go back to where we were originally at with the whole 60s, is that there will be a point in NBA history, and I think it's going to come up within the next 20 or 30 years, where people are going to go back.
Jesus.
What do you mean?
He said that shit like it was just a light 20 or 30 years, man. Just in the foreseeable future, in the next couple of 20 or 30
years. I don't know how long it's going to take because
you're going to be like 100 by then. I'll be like, wow, this guy. Damn.
The internet really dictates how things work. But in the next 20 or 30 years, I think what people are going to go back and they're going to look at like the 2000s, right? And they're going to be like, man, Kobe really wasn't that good because he wasn't shoot that many threes. Or they'll go as far as saying like, man, Klay Thompson really wasn't that good of a player because, like, if he's a three-point shooter, he's not shooting nowhere near as many threes as, you know, XYZ player in today's NBA. And everyone's scope and their belief and their understanding of how the NBA functions and works continues to evolve. And because of that, we tend to belittle the people who came before us who actually laid down the groundwork, which is a huge reason why, despite the fact that even though, yes, the 60s look like they are a really bad era, I never disrespect what they were able to bring to the floor every single night when they were laying down that groundwork and that blueprint for us to continue to grow as a community and as individual ball players, you know?
Jesus, man. So I just checked up. I wanted to compare the stats between Del Curry and Steph Curry. By the way, so Del Curry is Wardell Stephen Curry, and then Stephen Curry is Wardell Stephen Curry II.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys saw it. I didn't know he was like the second of the first. Anyway, besides the point, so Del Curry is like, everyone knew he was a three-point shooter, like just a lockdown. But he averaged at a career high in the 94-95 season, 5.2 three-point attempts per game. You compare that to his son, who at his height averaged 11.2 in the 2015-16 season. So that's more than double the threes that his dad attempted, Stephen Curry.
Now, I'm pretty sure you don't know this, but I'll just kind of ruin this part of the 90s for you. If I'm not mistaken, in the 95 season, they actually moved the three-point line closer to the basket.
In the 95 season?
Yeah, from 95, I think, all the way to 98.
So is that 23 feet now? What was it at before?
You know that, I could be a little off, but you know where the free throw line is at?
Free throw line is 15 feet.
Okay, but you know what, like, the dome is for the free throw line? Like, you know how it's, like, a circle at the top,
and then it's, like, a free throw line? That's a high school three-point line.
No. The free throw line, right?
I know what you're saying, the dome on top of that.
Yeah, the dome on top of that, that's where the three-point line was.
So that's high school.
That's basically where they had it at.
Yeah, so usually how it works is high school is right at the top of the dome, around the arc, it's a three-point line. College, I think, is a couple feet back. And then you go one more foot back for the NBA, if I'm not mistaken.
It might have been a couple of feet back from there, but they moved it closer, though. And they wanted to promote three-point shooting. And so if you go back through
history... the three-point line hug the semicircle on top
I'm almost 100% sure it hugged it.
Okay, so that's high school. All right.
So there's in the 90s, there's like a spike where players will start shooting threes between 95 and 98. And during that stretch, they moved the three-point line closer. Which is another reason why many people try to discredit the 90s.
Yeah, that actually makes sense.
Which is another reason why I discredit Reggie Miller, because he's trash. Reggie Miller just trash.
Because the field goal attempt, the three-point attempts jump in that season to like five attempts, and then after 97 season, it dropped back down to 2.8. Which, I think that was just that was, I think he was an injured season, but he played less minutes. So I don't know if that's going to be the case across the board, but specifically for Del Curry.
I don't think it's 97. I think it's 98. That's when it kind of drops across the board. But I just know for a fact that era, that stretch right there, like everyone's 3-point percentage and the amount of attempts that they had went through the roof during that stage.
Have you ever shot low at an NBA 3-pointer? I know it, like, if you look at the college,
farther than what it looks like.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, guys, I recommend trying it out. The high school 3-pointer is a breeze. It's basically a fucking mid-range shot. The college one is like it's a little D's, you know. You gotta really get your legs into it, unless you're like a really big guy or you like whatever the case. But the second you step, and I know it's only like a foot back to the NBA 3-point line, whatever it is, because I played at the Chicago Windy City Bulls, the D-League team's facility, and I also got a chance to put up some shots in the Detroit Pistons' Little Caesars Arena. Like it is far, man. And when you think about how Stephen Curry even takes steps beyond that and shoots the ball, and it looks like he takes no effort. Like, I don't know how he has the power. It's insane. You really get a chance, and you put up a shot, and you're like, yo, they shoot from limitless range. Is that what you're telling me? It's very impressive, man, to do that and also shoot a good percentage and to make it look so effortless. Jeez, man, these NBA players are something serious, bro. You know, unlike 2K.
That's the reason why Steph is the greatest shooter of all time, man.
And, you know, I was watching the Cavalier game, and I think that, if I'm not mistaken, the commentator said Kyle Korver was the greatest shooter in the NBA. Like, and it was... It wasn't even the Cavs broadcast I was listening to. I almost stopped for a second, like, we're just going to continue to disrespect Curry. All right, bet. Because it's not even...
Korver's definitely not this...
Not even close, neither. And it's not close. At all, whatsoever. You should make a video about that, Lo. Like you could find some sort of title, but comparing three-point shooters across eras, that'd be an interesting one.
Why? What? That's stupid.
That's not stupid at all. What you mean?
How would I be able to do that?
Just compare using statistics and your comparative analysis.
But you can't compare them across eras if there's certain rules that would determine where the 3-point line is.
So just do that. I'm not saying determine who's like top 10 or what. Actually, that would be interesting. I'm not going to lie. If you could figure that out, Lo, you might catch some heat from a guy who's like, what you mean Reggie Miller ain't top 10?
That's what I'm saying. Like there's no way. And if you were to make a top 10 list, like 7 of them would exist in the last 10 years.
So what's wrong with that?
You might just... Oh, that's stupid, Adrian. Come on.
I'm just saying, like, I think that I would watch that video if you did that. Because I don't think anyone's ever even remotely done something like that.
No, there has been someone who did it. But it's just too hard to, like... It's too many variables you have to take into account for stuff like that.
But that's, you do it all the time, Lo. You ask me to come up with my top 10 of all time. You know how much variables is in question?
That's easy because you could still regulate it to where they stand within their own peers in competition and then compare that amongst one another.
You could do the same with 3-point shots, bro. Come on.
No, you're telling me to look at someone who is shooting 40% from behind the arc one season while another player is shooting 40% from behind the arc, even though their shot is like 4 feet further from the rim than their
come on
peers.
I know I don't know how close it was in the 798 or whatever, but it wasn't no 4 feet closer, Low.
I gotta go check it, bro, because I think it was like, I think it was a huge difference.
If you say so
I'll check it though. But yeah, I mean, it's nice talking about NBA history about you, man. I know you don't really know much, you know.
Come on, Lo. Let's not go down this
road. I want you to really go ahead and get that knowledge down pat, man.
You know what's crazy is, like, I still don't really care. Like, I don't care about Shaq and Penny until, like, I watch it. And I'm like, yo, this is really interesting. But, like, before that, I still am like, yo, why am I doing this? Like, I could be, like, playing Fortnite right now. But then I watch it, and I'm like, yo, this is fantastic. I can't believe more people don't know about this. You know?
I guess, but I mean... I don't know. I mean, to me, it's not that impressive because I already know a lot of this stuff. So it's like, eh. I don't really want to know that much about it anymore.
So Lo, one last thing before we head out on the podcast, man. So I believe it was David Blatt who was asked. No, it was David David Blatt, Jesus. David Griffin was asked, and he said that the Cavs didn't believe they had a chance of signing LeBron James when hiring David Blatt. And, like, they got a couple quotes and everything from them. But, like, even at times where, like, people had some sort of certainty, like, LeBron's going to re-sign or LeBron's going to go here, basically the Cavaliers are saying they wouldn't have signed David Blatt if they even believed they had a 1% chance of signing LeBron James, which I thought was interesting because LeBron was the reason he effectively got fired. What is David Blatt doing right now?
I think he went back overseas. Also, as a side note, it's almost 2 feet. That's the difference. That's what it was.
Okay, because 4 sounded ridiculous. 2 feet is, yeah, that's, I think that's, I don't know if it's exactly high school. It might be a little bit further from high school, but.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, David Blatt, he's somewhere overseas, but, I mean, David Blatt is, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, but especially looking back at it now, but it does make sense. Because if I'm not mistaken, the way that they were moving in that offseason, they were moving in a direction of Kyrie is going to be our main guy, and whoever we draft in this upcoming draft class who end up being Wiggins is going to be the second option. And then pick and roll style of play, which is something that Blatt was known for overseas with Kyrie Irving, and having a perimeter player who potentially supposed to be a defender on the wing with Kyrie to kind of help him out. And so that makes sense theoretically. But then once LeBron gets there, you have to just readjust everything. And David Blatt, his format and his style of play really wasn't going to benefit LeBron, because LeBron would have been doing a little bit more than just pick and roll, and Kyrie couldn't be out to the side defending because he was never viewed as a defender anyway. But I don't think David Blatt was even ready to be a head coach in the league, though.
Because I don't know, but yeah, I don't maybe, know. I don't know maybe, what you're
I'm
right.
gonna say, because the stuff that he was doing, like, there was questionable rotations. Remember that time where Ty Lue had to, like, pull him off to the side because he was about to call a timeout, even though they didn't have any more timeouts? Yeah. And they were going to get a technical foul for that, and they were going to give the ball back to the Bulls, and the Bulls were going to shoot a free throw before. Like, he was about to screw up that entire series.
I remember that.
Just because of that mistake. So, no, yeah. I don't think he was ready. And that's not, like, a knock on him, but I feel like the same thing about Jason Kidd. Like, I don't think you should just be jumping into a situation as a head coach without taking the proper the proper steps of becoming one. So, like, become an assistant first. Spend some time in the coach's huddles. Spend some time watching video and film. And I understand as a player, you have that those type of advantages over some other people. But I still feel like there should be a transition from jumping from a player to a head coach, or overseas coach to a head coach. That's another reason why I don't think Billy Donovan is a good coach, because he took that step from the collegiate level to the NBA level, and it's very obvious that he has a hard time getting to professional players the same way that he got to some of his college players. So I just don't think you should be able to do that, but it makes sense that they wouldn't hire him if they knew LeBron was going to come. That makes sense.
Yeah. David Griffin said,
also I'm sorry, I'm also to cut you off. That's another reason why LeBron should just let people know what he's doing. Like, I know he's like, I want to keep my options open. Like, just make the decision and let people know what you're doing, so we don't sit here and spend all this money in a year wasted on David Blatt just so we can say we're going to give him our chance. Like,
That's a really good point.
If he just sat there and said, like, yo, this is what I want to do, I'm kind
of. But maybe he didn't know yet, right?
I mean, he may not have known, but he could have, like, said, I'm exhausted. I'm pretty sure he knew by the end of that Miami run. He's like, okay, I've exhausted my opportunities here with Miami. Bosh isn't looking the same, and plus I want to go back to Cleveland and figure out what's going on. Like, you just need to make the decision.
Yeah.
So the team you're going to, they don't make decisions that contradict what you're about to do. That's the reason why he just needs to start doing this. But this whole, I don't know, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. Shut the fuck up. You know what you're about to do, bro.
David Griffin said, at least we really believed he was going to take at least a year to figure out whether or not we can build in a positive direction.
And so that's a wasted year.
Yeah, it was a wasted year. I don't think he was necessarily a bad coach. I mean, even you just said questionable rotations. You could accuse Ty Lue or really any coach of doing the same.
I don't think Ty Lue should be. I think Ty Lue was like assistant coach for like 1 year.
I don't know whether he deserved it or not. I just know that's what LeBron is comfortable with. And if that's what LeBron is comfortable with, then you just got to keep where he's at. You can't even consider moving that. You really, like if you're a GM or the coach of a team that has a star as big as someone like Kobe or Mike or LeBron James, you basically are at the mercy of whatever they want, because the last thing you want to do is upset them. Like I was at, for example, I was at the 2K League draft a few days ago, and so I was in the war room and I was talking to the guys that was being drafted. So the Raptors uprising drafted their first two picks, who coincidentally both played on the same prime team. But then I was asking a couple of them questions. I was recording them just to see for like social media purposes. And like I was like, yo, which player would you want to play with? And then he said, yo, this player. And so in an attempt to help make those guys comfortable and happy, immediately Shane was like, yo, yeah, let's see if this guy's available. And then if he's available, we'll pick him up in the third round. And so, yeah, you're right. You need to allow them to build around you. You can't do that unless you tell them exactly what's on your mind or what you're looking for. And like he kind of just keeps that shit quiet all the time. And then the LeBron fans are like, yo, look how he has no help. But it's like, yo, he brought it upon himself, you know? He could have gotten more help. He just had to point the GM into the right direction.
Not only that, like, it's not just he's waiting until the last second. It's also like he's going to these teams that potentially may not have any help in the next, like, 2 years. It's like, okay, I don't know, bro. Like, that thing is, like, he... Like, him and Chris Paul, and I applaud them for this, but they, like, they really push heavy for players that have the ability to do what they want to do in free agency. And then they're the ones who are taking advantage of it. And again, I have no problem with it, but you can't turn around and sit there and tell me that, oh, he doesn't have any help when he's the one who's deciding, he's the one who's deciding which team he wants to go to. Like, that's what he's doing. He knows for a fact he'd be probably better off just going to the Spurs, but you know, he ain't going to no Spurs. He ain't doing that.
Oh, man. So anyway, we'll end it on that note. We'll talk just your highlight player real quick, bro. And yo, how about we do this after the highlight player every podcast, man? I'll mention a documentary that I feel like if you have time, you should watch.
Actually, real quick before we end this, because I feel we got a little bit more time because we messed up the audio somewhere in the middle. Yo,
you messed up the audio.
Yeah, mess up the audio. On Twitter, I did this little thing where I posted up two teams, and I want you to tell me who would you pick.
What are you gonna link it to me or?
I'll just explain it to you. All right, so Team A consists of Steve Nash at point, Klay Thompson.
Oh, I saw that. That was a really tough one, but keep going, just for the people.
Okay, so Team A is Steve Nash, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, and Anthony Davis. And Team B is Gary Payton, D-Wade, Sean Marion, and Dirk. All of these players are in their prime. Who would you pick? Which team would you pick?
I think, like, this is very tough, but I think I would go with Team A. Because I look at their offensive output, and all of those guys can drop buckets. Now, the same goes for Team B, but I don't think to the same degree. Like, Steve Nash, easily a better scorer than Gary Payton. Kawhi, I think, is a better scorer than Sean Marion. I think you get a little bit of Dirk stretching the floor if you pick him. But then Dwayne Wade's not really a good three-point shooter. I just feel like Team A is a little bit more versatile. Nash, Klay Thompson, Kawhi, and Davis. And because those are three phenomenal defenders you're pairing with Nash, any liability he is defensively, they won't have any trouble picking up for.
Okay, so this is how me and my friends made this list. We picked two players who weren't known for their defense, which is Dirk and Nash. And the first three, it's hard to explain, but the first team is filled with players who people try to make arguments that they are system players. Steve Nash, system player with the Suns. Klay Thompson, system player with the Warriors, and Kawhi, who's a system player with the Spurs, obviously, right? And then you just have an extremely talented player in Anthony Davis. Then on Team B, it's just a whole bunch of talented players, well-rounded players, GP, D-Wade, and Dirk, and then a system player with Sean Marion. And you try to figure out who would you pick. I pick Team B, and again, the thing is close, though. I don't think it's like a right or wrong answer. But I pick Team B because how poor of a defender Nash is. I don't know who Nash would guard in that situation.
I don't think Dwayne Wade's like a good defender neither.
You're retarded then. You're just stupid. I would,
because you're putting Dwayne Wade in the same category as literally top tier defenders in Klay Thompson, Davis, Kawhi.
Gary he's just Payne. As good as a defender as Klay Thompson.
No, he's not, and he's not near those guys. What you mean, Lo?
Let's wrap up this. Let's wrap up this podcast, Agent.
You think Gary Payton and Dwayne Wade are the same defensively?
I said Klay Thompson.
I'm mentioning just all of them in total are better defenders than Dwayne Wade. Those three,
Klay Thompson,
those four.
You think Klay Thompson, better,
Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, and Gary Payton are all better
just
defenders.
Just Klay Thompson is a better defender than D Wade.
In his prime. Even if in the prime. I agree.
No, you're stupid. You don't know who D Wade is then.
Anyway, I do know, and I watched.
No, you
D-Wade.
Don't. You don't know who D Wade is if you really believe that.
Anyway, I feel like D Wade is the only reason that would even be close, because Kawhi, I would take over Sean Marion in an instant, and I would rather take Steve Nash than Gary Payton. Obviously, look, just real quick before we leave. Interestingly enough, I don't know if I talked to you about this, but Steve Nash said that he wishes he would have been more aggressive in his career, that he was a little bit more passive.
I literally put this on my Twitter.
I don't know if you put it in there. I just read an article about it.
Yeah, you're mad late. Yeah, I know he wished he was more aggressive because he knows for a fact what he did wrong. He allowed that whole narrative of, oh, you got to pass the ball as a point guard to take over his career, and look at him now.
I don't think he allowed a narrative to do anything. I just think he built his brand as the guy who's a phenomenal passer and a great three-point shooter.
And that's the reason why, if we just talking about strictly talent, Gary Payton is better than Steve Nash, bro.
I feel like
if we're talking about strictly talent, not career.
Just talking about who's a better player. Forget strictly talent. What does that mean?
Okay, who's a better player? Gary Payton.
Gary Payton's more all around. But if you ask me who I want on my team, I would say Steve Nash.
No, it's Gary Payton. But the only reason why I picked Team B is because Steve Nash couldn't guard anyone. That would be the problem. And that would be a very massive problem.
You could argue the same about Dirk when it comes to Anthony Davis.
That is true, but Dirk on the other end can still put up points on Anthony Davis.
You don't think Nash can put up points on Gary Payton?
No!
You might be wilding, bro.
On Gary Payton?
Listen, I know Gary Payton's that guy, bro, but that's Steve Nash.
And Nash wasn't even a scorer anyway. You literally just sat there and said you wish he was more aggressive, but he wasn't even a scorer.
But that doesn't mean he couldn't have been aggressive.
He would choose to be aggressive while being guarded by Gary Payton, of all people. Are you serious?
Listen, man.
No, he couldn't. You know he couldn't.
I'm not saying who's like, that's you'd have to dive deep to get into a whole argument like that. I just think Team A has more upside. Plus, like, yo, damn, Anthony Davis been killing it this year, bro. You want that on my team too? Oh, man.
And I get it. I hear you. But KG used to be killing it, and KG could not guard Dirk. Dirk used to be giving KG the business.
Yeah, no one can guard Dirk, though. Like, that knee shit he does is just unguardable.
Period. That's what I'm saying. So, I understand what you're saying, though, because I definitely don't believe that Dirk could guard KG. I mean, Dirk could guard Anthony Davis at all. However, the difference between the two, I guess, defensive liabilities in Nash and Dirk is that Dirk could easily still get off the points that he needs to get off. Whereas Nash, he's not going to score.
I think Nash would be more dependent on who he has there for his pick and roll. But considering it's fucking Anthony Davis, I feel like I'd give him the edge.
He just couldn't guard. He couldn't score.
I don't think he'd be able to beat Gary Payton on ISO.
He would. There's no way.
You're right with that.
There's no way.
But
there's
off
no
of pick way. And roll, like, it's not just about Gary Payton's defense or ability to slip through screens. It's about being able to communicate with his teammates. And then if you have Anthony Davis, who could either pop midi or even three-pointers now, or roll, like, I don't, like, Anthony Davis, Steve Nash, that's just a dream pick and roll right there, man.
I hear what you're saying, though. I mean, again, that's why I say it was tough, though. But I still feel like Steve Nash defensively that right there was just a huge question mark for me, because I don't know
who's the worst defender, Steve Nash or DeRozan?
Steve Nash.
Because I've been watching DeRozan a lot recently, bro, and there's so many times where, like, somebody just walks by him. And it doesn't even have to be, like, an explosive player or a really quick player. It is uncanny how many times it happens.
And you should have been watching Steve Nash. People used to stroll by Steve Nash.
Yeah, I mean, anyway.
I'm just saying,
I have to watch some documentaries on the two-time MVP Steve Nash, man. You know, yo, I was such a fan of Steve Nash growing up because he was Canadian, that my first ever email address was My name underscore sons 13.
You should probably keep that to yourself.
Nah, I'm just telling you. Like,
nah, don't ever let nobody know.
Yeah,
that.
I'm just letting you know though. That's all, man. Hey, what's your highlight player, Lo?
My highlight player is Nurkic. And I don't think that whole Blazer team gets enough credit for what they've been doing over the last 20 games. And the fact that they've been able to push themselves into the third seed is extremely impressive. But as I was doing my video explaining how like the biggest surprises, it just dawned on me while I was doing that video that the Blazers are actually one of the better teams when it comes to interior defense. And that's all Nurkic. And defensively as a whole, that team has become significantly better. And Nurkic is the one who's actually been stepping up a lot on a defensive end, which is something that they obviously been looking for over the past 2 to 3 years after they lost Robin Lopez and LaMarcus Aldridge. So I got to give a huge shout out to my man Nurkic, man.
All right. I'm going to give it to Ben Simmons, who was just
out of control. That is a fact. He is out of control right now.
Yeah, he's been balling, bro, and like he's not really a three-point threat neither, a lot like Giannis. So the fact that he's still able to get to the rim, even though people know they could sag on him, really speaks to like how athletic and dominant he's about to be in the NBA and how athletic and dominant he's been, especially in that Cleveland Cavalier game. He had like 28 points or something and a massive triple-double. So shout out to Ben Simmons, bro. He deserves a highlight player.
He's already better than Kemba Walker, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Because I'm trying to figure out where would I rank him right now. I'm not gonna say it, but I mean, he's already better than Kemba.
Lo, the people want to know your rankings, man. You need to release them.
What a face.
What do I sound like right now? Who do I sound like?
I don't know. Who do you
sound like? You, man. You, Lo.
What a face.
All right. Anyway, on that note, I recommend this week that you watch that Iverson podcast. Very emotional.
Iverson podcast or Iverson documentary?
Oh, Iverson documentary.
You might have a podcast.
But watch the and prepare to be emotional, bro. Bring some tissues with you, man, because you're gonna see the shit he went through if you don't already know, and then you're gonna feel some type of way, man. You might hate David Stern after watching that. Cause he doesn't get into detail about the shit David Stern put him through. But I'm just saying, man. But if you guys enjoy, make sure to drop a like, subscribe if you guys are new. I'm wildin'. But do leave a 5-star.
Yeah, you are wildin'. Thank you. I just started with what you just said.
Thank you guys for watching and listening. I'm tripping right now. This is the Off Top Podcast, a.k.a. the Ninth Seed Podcast. And we'll catch y'all later. I'm out.
Peace. You're so corny.
It's mine, Lo.
No,
give it
it's
up.
Not. It's, first of all, you didn't even allow me to say bye to the people. See y'all later,
say
people.
Bye. Say bye.
See y'all later, podcast people. It's the one and only legend of winning, a.k.a. Lo.
Come on, you don't need your own outro. I just gave the podcast.
Chill out.
You just gave your own outro for an outro. Like, Jesus, bro, we just outro twice. That's tough.
But you're sitting here trying to just steal my piece. You know what I'm saying?
It's mine now. I'm just telling you it's mine now. That's all.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah, hang on a sec.
You've been riding this thing all day, and my son would like a turn.
He seems a bit young for this twin-cylinder hog, doesn't he?
It's a coin-operated kiddie bike.
No, ma'am. It's a coin-operated freedom machine.
No, it's a kiddie bike.
It's hard to be without your bike, so do something easy and protect it with Progressive Motorcycle Insurance. With basic policies as low as $75 a year, you'll be back on the road in no time. Visit Progressive.com to quote today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Annual premium for basic liability policy not available in all states.